This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
I'm curious, how many of you here are fly fishermen? Raise your hand if you are. It's just you and me? Interesting. Oh, there we got one in the back. Excellent. I want to read a paragraph from Norman MacLean's book, A River Runs Through It. In our family, there was no clear line between religion and fly fishing. We lived at the junction of great trout rivers in western Montana, and our father was a Presbyterian minister and a fly fisherman who tied his own flies and taught others. He told us about Christ's disciples being fishermen, and we were left to assume, as my brother and I did, that all first-class fishermen on the Sea of Galilee were fly fishermen, and that John, the favorite, was a dry fly fisherman. I've always liked that paragraph because it's an intersection of two of my interests or even loves, and that is fly fishing and reading. You know, as you interacted this week, maybe you met somebody brand new, you probably started by asking them, or you looked at their name tag, and you said, "Oh, Luane, how are you? Nice to meet you. And where are you from? And are you teaching this year? How many years have you taught?" And you ask them a series of questions. And maybe you ask them, "Do you like to read? It's one of my questions. And what have you done as an occupation?" Or things like that. And what you're doing with those questions is you're looking for common ground. You're looking for common people that you know and met. And you're looking for common interests. And you know what it's like? Sometimes you ask somebody, eight questions, and there's just no common ground and no common interests. And after a while, you turn to somebody else, right? That's what often happens, because this is probably not going to be your next best friend. But you find common ground and you find shared interests, and there's a bond that you develop. The premise for this talk is kinship is built in mutual enjoyment of an object or a pastime. A quote from C.S. Lewis that I like is, "Friendship is born at the moment when one person says to another, 'What? You too? I thought I was the only one.'" And we're talking about the power of shared interests as you connect with your students in the classroom this year. I want to make mention, too, that I've been focusing on teacher and student relations or connections, but I want to emphasize that I'm always intentionally looking to promote friendships between students at school, because I think that that's part of a very healthy school. A healthy school is one that produces friends for life. I'm excited about this topic this morning, but I understand it is so broad. I've just decided that I'm going to talk a little bit about how we do it, but I'm going to talk mostly about the things that I have found to be useful. And so if you had a list of things that worked for you, it would probably be different. You don't have the same interests. But these are things that have worked for me. These are genuine interests that my students and I have had or connected over in school. This list is on your handout if you look at it. Do not worry, I do not plan to talk about nearly all of these. I just kind of listed them as I thought of each one, and the story came to my mind on basically all of these things, and I'm not going to try to cover nearly all that. I want to talk about the ones that have been the most effective, most helpful for me, I think. So how do you find out what your students are interested in? If you've been listening, we've been talking about that a little bit, listening to them and having conversations with them. Having more casual conversations often are the most helpful. You know, we like to give those fun quizzes at the beginning of the year where you know, list your favorite color and what's your favorite president and what kind of whatever. And what do you want to be when you grew up? And those are interesting, but they're not terribly, often students are not really open on those things about the things that they really love and care about if they hold them in their hearts, because they might be kind of precious to them, and they don't want you to make fun of them if they don't know you very well. thinking, if I would have filled one of those things out when I was in school, and you know, what's your favorite, what do you want to be when you grow up, I would have probably looked around and said, you know, see what somebody else wrote and say trucker or pole barn builder or something like that. When deep in my heart, I really wanted to, I was trying to decide between a cowboy or a hermit. And I was kind of gravitating toward a hermit because that the whole cave life and, you know, no girls thing, it just seemed like a good way. I remember the only person I ever told that to was my mom, and she was not at all supportive. So, and I'm glad that didn't work out for me as well, too. So building connections through art and literature, first thing. And the first point is reading. One of my goals in school is to have my students leave school enjoying books. And for some of them, this is going to be in the form of audiobooks, because they may have a hard time actually reading different things. I do prefer a real book, but I'll take what I can get in this area. And I want to push them beyond Calvin and Hobbes and Diary of a Wimpy Kid. It's not a terrible place to start. Sometimes if they just refuse to read something like that, or a graphic novel, sometimes it's not a terrible place to start. I hope that's not blasphemous to say that, but get them started somehow. Now, how many of you like book reports? Okay. How many of you liked them when you were in school? Some, got a few. Great. Okay. When I started teaching, I think as a whole, my students did not like book reports, and I didn't either. Really didn't, because it was this, you know, this kind of formal thing that you did. But then I realized, I love book reports. I do them all the time. And my students did too. They would often come and tell me, Mr. John, you need to read this book. And then they would tell me. So I'm going to do a book report for you this morning. This is a book called More Than Rivals. Curious how many of you have heard of this book. More Than Rivals, a few of you, good. This is a true story about a black boy named Bill and a white boy named Eddie in Gallatin, Tennessee in the mid-1960s. Now, Eddie and Bill both loved the game of basketball. They were 11 years old, I think, at the beginning of the story. They live on different sides of the tracks, and they attend segregated schools. And they are not allowed to play together. But one day, Eddie is walking home from the park, and he hears the sound of a basketball being dribbled. And he peeks through the hedge, and he sees six black boys playing basketball in the backyard hoop. And he watches wistfully for a while, and then one of the boys is called away by his mother, and the other players grumble, and they rearrange their team to play 2-on-3, 3-on-2, and Eddie gathers his courage and he walks through the hedge and he says, hey, can I play? And these black boys look at him and say, what are you doing here? And he says, I'd like to play with you. And they're skeptical. Bill, who is the leader, says, can you shoot? And Eddie says, I can shoot. And so they allow him to play. And Eddie demonstrates that he can shoot. He is actually an excellent shot. He practices, and he practices playing basketball at home. He shoots all the time. And he is a very good shot. They play, and they play hard. Bill gives Eddie a hard foul and knocks him down, and Eddie jumps up, calls him on it, but doesn't get mad. And you know, a friendship is born, at least as much as a white boy and a black boy can be friends in the South. And 1960. And this is a friendship born over the love for the game of basketball. You know, time moves along, and Bill's family moves to the other side of town, and effectively separating the boys because it's too far for them to ride their bikes. And they both grow into exceptional athletes. Eddie is 5 foot, 9 or 10 or 11, somewhere in high school, in ninth grade, and he can dunk a basketball in ninth grade. And Bill grows to be 6'4" or 6'5", and he is incredibly strong and quick. They both become the captains. Both become the captains of their respective teams. Both teams have a very strong squad, and this is in their senior year at this point. Senior or sophomore, I can't remember, it doesn't matter. And the captains of their teams, both teams are very strong. Bill's school team, the black team, is undefeated as they go through the season. They continue, they win every time. And Eddie's team is also undefeated. And it dawns on the officials that these two teams may actually meet in the finals, in the state championships. And I think there's some, if I remember right, there's a little bit of talk about people find out these two boys were friends at one point. So to further stir the pot, it's announced that the black high school will be closing the next year. Brown versus Board of Education has been working its way down, and the schools are going to be integrated the next year. So this is the last time that these two teams would ever have a chance of meeting. And as the season progresses and the teams continue undefeated, both teams keep winning, and it looks like they're gonna collide. The tension mounts in town, and Eddie, as a leader of the white team, has people around him urging him to play hard. Don't let those guys beat you. If you meet, don't let them beat you. The Ku Klux Klan has said, there's a boy who is related to the Ku Klux Klan. He comes to Eddie and says, we're going to be there at the game, and we'll back you up. Just win that game. And Bill, who's the leader of the black team, is approached by some black Vietnam vets who they've come back from fighting over there, fighting for America, and they're not having any of this racial prejudice anymore. And they say, we'll be there. We'll be there in our corner. You win that game, play hard, win that game. So game day comes and people pour into the gym. The blacks are on one side, the whites are on the other. It's so tense in there, and the policemen are on edge, and the mayor is just wringing his hands because he's sure there's going to be a riot no matter what happens, whether the blacks win or the whites win. It's going to be chaos. So one thing about a book report that I always tell my students is you don't have to tell the whole story. You just have to sell it to us, right? But I will tell you that something happens that changes the outcome, of the game. And something also happens that changes the history of that town. And it's not as much about a game of basketball as it is about friendship. So I like book reports. I find they're a good way to get students interested in reading. And you know, it's interesting to me too that I meet lots of teachers. And you're here today, and you probably don't like reading. And I always, when a teacher tells me that, I always kind of want to have a moment of silence and just sympathy for you. Because I've found reading to be so incredibly helpful in teaching. The love of reading. And it's something that I really want my students to catch like a virus that they can't get rid of. I want them to go away from school with a love of reading. So we talk about when they do the book reports, I don't make a big deal about their presentation. We write down their books. And I do talk to them a little bit about different things. I have to keep them certain time. They have a certain time limit. I also read storybooks to them. after lunch recess. Usually this is one of my favorite activities at school. And I usually, it's fun to pick a book that engages all of them. I'm not sure how you all do it, but one of the things I've found is that I like to think of the younger students, and maybe particularly the students who don't read very much, and try to pick a book that will pull them in. And the older ones will get it. And if you read with good enough expression and all that, you'll probably captivate them as well. Now, we do read some books that are just a wee bit heavier, but for the most part, the books I read for story are ones that my youngest students will engage with. Now, I did write down just a few books here, and I think there's somebody here, and I'm kind of thinking it was Stephen Brubaker that had a big long list of books that students and teachers should read, something. Seems like I remember that, so maybe you could ask them about that. These are just a few books I read, and after I was done, sent it off, I thought of just lots and lots more. That first book on the list is Carry On, Mr. Bowditch, which I referenced earlier. It's one of my favorite books to read for story. It's got some hardship. It's got some heartbreak. It has some romance. It has great math. It's got history. It's got all kinds of interesting things in it. The Phantom Toll Booth is one that I would not have picked up, but my students wanted me to read this book. Okay, sure. So I looked at it. And it's full of witticisms, of puns, and it's a fantasy land, okay? Which I'm not that terribly interested in those books. But it's so interesting because there's all these English phrases and expressions in there. So just an example is they're traveling in here and they get in this car and the car doesn't move. And the travelers are talking and the fellow who's going to drive the car, one of them, he says, you have to be quiet. If you want to go anywhere, you have to be quiet. And they look at him and they're quiet and this car starts to move. And he said, see, it goes without saying. You know? And there's those things all the way through that book. Also, The Wednesday Wars by Gary D. Schmidt is one that was it's definitely been a favorite. And one of the things about Gary D. Schmidt books is he always picks on a topic of something. And in this case, it's Shakespeare. And I'm just going to guess, a lot of you are not terribly interested in Shakespeare, right? I was fascinated by this book and how he brought Shakespeare into a seventh grader's life. Interesting. What kind of books should you give or suggest to your students? There's going to be lots of different standards and ideas. I have a few quick things that I would say. Number one, I try to make sure that I know, we have a small school, small community, so I kind of know what the parents think about books, all of them. It's something I care about, and so I kind of know where all my parents are, and I know if I can recommend this book or the parents wouldn't like that. I suggest that's a good thing for you to know. The other thing, second point that I try to think about is this a book that will interest this child? And the third one, is it age appropriate? Or is it appropriate for his maturity level? I'm going to just quickly mention a few things that I think are really good books to read here as teachers. Okay? In To Sir with Love, Good Morning, Miss Dove, and The Thread That Runs So True are up on the right, down about 7 or 8 lines there. To Sir with Love and The Thread That Runs So True are true books. Good Morning, Miss Dove is a novel. It is such an interesting book. Good Morning, Miss Dove is about a... How many of you have read that book? Okay, that's a pretty popular one. It's about a single lady who teaches in a style that I have never attempted. And yet, I find her just captivating. And she was a captivating teacher. Couple others here that I think I'm just going to say are must-reads right? If I can, really quickly. Where the Wind Leads by Vin Chung. Excellent, excellent book. Life in a Jar, a story of she was a nurse during the World War II era who rescued Jewish children, and she hid their information in a jar in a backyard. Fascinating story, can't tell it. Around the World in 80 Days. I wonder how many of you have read that book. How many of you have read it to your students? Anybody? It's a little bit wordy and it's a little bit different, but that was an interesting book to read to my students. You only want to do it if they don't know the ending. This is one of those. One book that I consider to be very, very valuable for teaching high school history, American history, is Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. Such a tremendous history of the Native Americans. It's really a good book. The Broken Road. How many of you have read that book? Just curious. Okay, this is about George Wallace. You guys know who George Wallace was? Okay, what do you know about him? Anybody, can you tell me? What do most people know about him? You're an encyclopedia there. But that was exactly right. There you are. Okay, exactly right. So we remember him as a racist. Read that book. It talks about the last days of his life. Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Wounded Tiger, I mentioned the other day. I thought I should mention. This is the Wounded Tiger that's written by T. Martin Bennett. There's another book that I think looks like a bit of trash to me. And actually, somebody else started reading it because my wife or I had recommended the book, and they were like, why did they recommend this book? It's just drivel. So there is another one. This is the one by T. Martin Bennett. One of my favorite, all-time favorite novels. If you don't read novels, that's fine, but there's a lot of truth in novels, is the book All Quiet on the Western Front. It has the greatest ending line of any novel I've ever read. But don't skip ahead. One of the other, next thing, very quickly. So I think, I'm going to say here, just say, reading has been one of the most effective ways of connecting with students for me. Through all these other aspects that I talk about, except maybe music, reading comes into play for me. We research a subject and go on with that. Music is something that I have come to love. I always did like music. We sang a lot growing up. But when I started teaching school, I was scared of music because I was scared of my own voice. It sounded weak, and so, I would sing more quietly so nobody would hear me. And that is just a great way to increase your fear. I came to realize that music is very powerful, that when we sing together, it develops connections that you can't duplicate in any other way, really. And I have come to really enjoy music. So if your school does not sing much, that is something you should try to change. Music is so powerful. There's a lot of research that indicates the bonding effect that singing in a group has. There's oxytocin release, which is the chemical that kind of connects us a little bit. Also, it reduces cortisol in your brain, which is, cortisol causes stress. And it seems to also produce dopamine, which is our happy drug a little bit. So it's a powerful thing for you as a connecting tool. One of the ways we do it is through choir. Our school gives 2 concerts a year, and so we practice for those things. And we try to make that pretty enjoyable. That's a Christmas and a spring concert. It takes a lot of work, a lot of time singing together. Often somebody gets sick, often it's me. But it's a good time. We've had the privilege at our school of having a lot of teachers who care about music. Miss Ginger Good taught with me at the school the first year, back when she was a good girl. She's not a good girl anymore because she's now Mrs. Hofer. Also, Miss Charity Nolt taught with me both in Missouri and at our school there in Blue Mountain for, I'm not sure how long we taught together, 9 or 10 years. And she's very gifted in music, and she also has a wonderful sense of humor, which helps with music as well, sometimes. Found that. And well, one of the great joys for me was when students started to really enjoy the singing. And they would come and say, "Mr. John, can we please sing this song for our program? I know my parents would love it, or it would just be fun to sing this song." And when you get there, you know you've made some connections that will last, hopefully. Recorded music is interesting, too, in relating to teenagers. Now, there's something about recorded, the music we like to listen to. You know, we care about that, right? Because music has emotional impact for us. So one of the things about music, or something that has emotional impact, is that we become emotionally involved with our music. And so when we love a piece of music, and we find somebody else who loves a piece of music, that's a bond there as well. You know, the other side of that is if we love a piece of music, and somebody else does not love a piece of music, that it's almost offensive. Why don't you like this? This is wonderful music. You must be stupid. Or something like that. Your conversations can quickly go down that quickly. So be careful when you talk about music. If you don't like their music that they want you to listen to or they think is really nice, just be careful before you criticize. Remember that you are an adult. And what did you like when you were their age? Might not be the same thing. If it is, it's great. I hope it's great. Another thing that I don't have on your outline is creative writing. This is something that we've worked at. We have a creative class period in my classroom on Friday afternoon. We just do something creative. And one of the things we do, we'll tell stories, I'll assign them something. So Friday, I want you to tell us a story. 2 minutes long, can be a true story, can be something you make up, usually it's a true story. Or you can read to us a short story or poem, or you can write a story, and usually I'll assign them one thing, one of those things. And our writing was just a little, wasn't that great. And so I'm not a writer, but I wrote a story for them one time. I said, I want to write a cereal, right? Honeycomb. No, I wrote an actual cereal. So I went back to something that I used to like when I was their age. And I wrote this story was called The Gold of Troy, if I remember right. And it was a story of a cowboy who goes off into this canyon looking for lost cows, if I remember right. And this canyon has an interesting history because there's a story of these gold miners that disappeared, that went into this area somewhere, and there was something that happened, and they just never came out. And so this fellow is driving into, he's dropping down into this canyon, he gets deeper into this canyon, and the sun is just starting to set, and so there's all kinds of weird shadows on the canyon rim, and suddenly his horse spooks just a tiny bit, and he looks around, he can't see anything, and so he keeps going, his horse Blue Boy, because I like the name Blue Boy. Horse keeps going, and all of a sudden there's a terrible rumbling roar, and he looks up, and he sees a rock slide starting up on the mountain, just up the canyon. And so he claps the spurs to his horse and races forward, and the rocks are already tumbling down, and he just realizes that his horse is tripped, and he realizes he's flying through the air, and he's tumbling and tumbling, and comes to the comes to a crash on the ground. I don't remember how I wrote it. Should have brought the story along. But the thing is, just before he blacked out, he heard clearly, over the roar of the rocks and the crashing of everything, he heard the sound of someone laughing. So that was just part of the serial. And my students were very interested in that. And the story went on, and it turned out it was one of the demented miners who got trapped in, and so he went just a little bit crazy, and so this guy eventually was able to help him. You know, it was a long story. But they really liked that. You know what happened? They started writing. They started writing these stories on their own. Now, you might think that that's such a frivolous and worthless way of writing. Sure, it is. I agree. But I want to tell you something. I believe that when people do something for fun, they will eventually, they're more likely to take it seriously, eventually. Right? And so their writing did progress. And they began to write some things that were actually pretty good. I do write things that are more serious than that, too, actually. So. But it made an impact. One of the other things that I really enjoyed, I have learned to enjoy over the years, is painting. But I think I should move on here. That was another thing that I thought people that paint, they obviously don't have a life. But some of my students were interested in it. And so I studied into it, you know, or watched a 5-minute YouTube video on it, and discovered this is actually quite captivating. And I started getting into it, and I was very interested in it. And so I have spent hours and hours and hours painting. And I'm not a good painter, but I'm better than I used to be. And it is a good point of connection for me with a number of my students. One of the other things that I love doing is cooking meat. And that's been a great source of connection. We cook food at school, we grill, we smoke stuff, good stuff. And we've done a lot of things like that at school over the years. Outdoor pursuits, something that's good to think about when we talk about the outdoors, is the topic of recreation versus obsession. When a recreation becomes an obsession, it creates a corruption. But a recreation is a good thing. And one of my principal beliefs is that God has given us a beautiful world to enjoy, and it gives him pleasure when we do. Okay? So that's why I like mountain climbing. You think that you see a beautiful mountain and you're enjoying it. It's nothing like being on top. Nothing like being on top. So I believe in enjoying God's creation, taking care of it as well. Also, that an empty life is one that's spent on pleasure. If you just spend your life mountain climbing or things like that, I think you're going to have kind of an empty life. Now, I love the outdoors. We live in Oregon. We've got all kinds of beautiful things to visit. We do several hikes a year. No, several. Probably about one serious hike a year. And there's a couple places we go that I really enjoy taking my students. One is along the Columbia Gorge. There's a place that we hike into that's almost like a micro world of its own. If you know what the Columbia Gorge is, I think it has it's the most consistently windy place on Earth, at least in North America. And it has all kinds of interesting rock formations and all kinds of geological features. Very, very interesting. So one of these places, there's the striking basalt columns and things like that that are so fascinating. Also some Native American history and the twin rocks that were right here, and the Indians came and did this there, and all kinds of interesting things. Mountain climbing and hunting. Hunting is an absolutely great topic of conversation in school. Now, I'm curious, how many of you ladies like to hunt? Can you raise your hand? Okay, very good, excellent. Now, how many of you ladies teach boys who like to hunt, or girls? Yeah. It is worth your time to express an interest in them if they go deer hunting. They probably care about what kind of gun they shoot. You don't, but they do. And that's a good thing to connect with them on. Or maybe they're bow hunters or things like that. Ask them about that. Even if you're not interested, I think hunting is a pretty good pastime. I don't think it's a good obsession. Nothing is a good obsession, basically. But it's a good pastime for boys. And girls, too. Animals, have to quickly jog through these things here. But annals are such a good thing for children to get involved with, and very good for a school to get involved with. A couple years ago, two years ago, my students gave me a money book for my birthday, and Book of Oregon. It was fascinating, and a bunch of money in there. And so I took that money, I went out, and I bought a chinchilla. Y'all know what a chinchilla is? It's one of the prettiest little furry creatures that lives in South America in the Andes Mountains. Its fur is so dense that you don't want it to get wet because it will get moldy before it dries out. It's a wonderful classroom pet. It's not loud. It doesn't stink. It's way better than a hamster. It costs three times as much, but it's way better. It's worth it. And that has been an interesting thing for the students to come in, the other students in other rooms to come in and look at Annapurna. We named her Annapurna because, you know, she's from tall mountains, which Annapurna is one of the tallest mountains. When we had school at our place, I was interested how a number of the students would come, and first thing they wanted to do was pet the dog and the cat and go get the brush and brush our dog, and our dog just loved it. Our dog would go out to the end of the lane and sit there. We have an electric fence or a radio fence so we can't go out on the road, and just sit there and wait for the children to come in. And it's a huge dog, 120-pound lab, and he would just be there waiting. And he was so sad when we moved back up to school. He would still go out to the end of the lane and wait, look hopefully, wag his tail when the car came. He was a sad dog. And that has been a great source of connection. I have students, too, that love horses. Now, I loved horses, too, when I was young. When I became older, I decided they were kind of an expensive pet, and I forsook them. But I still am interested in them. It's interesting to me that I find that teenage girls like horses. I haven't had a boy in recent years that really liked horses. Lots of girls do. It's kind of interesting. So we talk about horses a fair amount. Sports, very quickly here. When I was in school, I think probably the thing that I enjoyed most about school was the sports that we played. And basketball and softball and volleyball ranked in order of enjoyment for me there. And as a teacher, I've come to value the connecting power of sports. And I'm not talking about professional sports, I'm talking about playing with your children. It's a powerful thing. All kinds of good opportunities for you. Now, sometimes it doesn't work, and I'm not saying if you can't do that, that you're a bad teacher or anything like that. I'm just saying it's a powerful tool if you're able to do that. Sportsmanship, learning to win and lose gracefully. This is something we talk about in school. And I've told my students, I like to watch them play sports. I like to watch them succeed. But I'm even more interested in watching them when they fail, when they lose, to see how they respond. It's interesting to see how people respond when they win, too. Or you just all over it. But it's more interesting to see how you respond when you fail. Do you make lots of excuses? So we talk about these things. Great opportunities for you. It's an opportunity for you as a teacher to be a role model. And I'm going to tell you, this is tough. It's been one of the toughest things for me, I think, because you're always on. You're always on. So every time that you make a play or something, they're watching you to see how you respond. And you have to, you just have to get it right every time. And I don't. I haven't. I think I'm better now than I used to be. Socially, too, learning to encourage each other in softball. It was interesting to me, last night I was out there attempting to play softball with y'all a little bit, some of you, and I could just tell y'all are a group of teachers, because you talk to each other, you encourage each other, and it is hard for me to go play ball, softball, volleyball, anything, where it's just quiet. I like some noise. That's the way I grew up. But you know, it can be different in different communities. When I grew up, softball was a big thing, and there was a lot of exhorting on the softball field. To run, run! You can get that, or whatever it was. And if you made a mistake, there was some exhorting too. Right? Come on, why didn't you get that? And so that was my frame of reference a little bit. So I started teaching school, and I continued in that vein. And you can get a little sarcastic. I remember especially just being frustrated with students who would dodge out of the way of a grounder. Like, don't dodge out of the way of that ball. That ball won't hurt you much. But you know, when you're a little person and that ball's coming fast, it's scary. And it's good for you to remember that. And it's good for the teacher to get hit on the shin or something really hard every once in a while too. Hopefully the students don't enjoy it. But it is something that I did learn in relating to my students, and that is, it is not helpful to get upset. Some encouragement is great, but if there's an upset tone at all in your voice, you're not doing anything positive. Now, I still do exhort my students, generally in a more of a joking manner. One of the things that still is a little bit of a pet peeve is when the catcher does not hustle his stumps over to catch a fly ball or a pop-up. Because usually it's somebody on his team, right? We don't have enough players to supply our own catcher. Anyway, I like for them to hustle for that ball. And somewhere once upon a time I said, come on, my grandma could have gotten that ball, and she uses a walker. And they picked that up and they thought that was terribly funny. And so, you know, it kind of got repeated. What was funny is I told my grandma, I love my grandma. She's the most wonderful lady. Well, she died a few weeks ago. It was very sad. And I told my grandma about that, and she just loved it. She laughed and laughed. She thought it was so funny. Anyway. But that was a point of connection. Okay. And it is actually time for me to stop. I have a bunch more here. If you look at the rest of them, prison ministry was something that I've talked about a whole bunch. Also, firefighting has been a real interest to me. I'm curious, how many firefighters do we have here? Are people that have been firefighters? Okay, we've got a couple there. I don't see Jonas's hand, but I know he was a firefighter too at one point, which I found fascinating. Very, very interesting. I've always been interested in that and have a number of students that have been too. The last point I'd like to make very quickly here is that I think is so critical as we think of connecting with our students is the pursuit of God. Think about a friend you have known for years, and you have the opportunity to introduce him to another friend. You'll talk about the things that you have done together. You know, I hope that your relationship with God is very evident to your students, and it's attractive to your students. It's not the drive-by shooting type of thing that was mentioned last night. I like that term. That's a really good one, because that relationship that you have is so important when you're talking about being Jesus to your students. I'd like to read, in conclusion, this very short poem. Teachers, you are the molders of their dreams, the gods who build or crush their young beliefs of right or wrong. You are the spark that sets aflame the poet's hand or lights the flame in some great singer's song. You are the gods of young, the very young. You are the guardian of a million dreams. Your every smile or frown can heal or pierce a heart. Yours are 100 lives, 1,000 lives. Yours is the pride of loving them, the sorrows too. Your patient work, your touch, make you the God of hope that fills our souls with dreams, make those dreams come true. It has been my pleasure to speak to you and with you this week. And I wish you God's richest blessings on your classroom this year.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Dock for Learning at thedockforlearning.org.